Welcome to DevCast, brought to you by Devrel Smith, the right people. DevCast is where property meets people, industry figures, news and views, what it takes to be your best. So sit back, earphones on, and enjoy this edition of DevCast.
Welcome to DevCast, Devrel Smith's audio series, which holds exclusive and thought-provoking interviews with professionals from right across the property industry. My name's Andrew Devrel Smith. I'm the CEO and founder of Devrel Smith. And today I'll be joined by real estate partner Mish Gondareya, and according to BizNow, one of the most influential women in property, Susan Freeman. Susan is an experienced real estate lawyer. Her in-depth understanding of the property market is, I would say, second to none. The emerging world of tech and her business training combined with a massive network. I believe you are, Susan, the most connected person within the real estate industry in London. She's also a masterful podcaster with Property She, and I'm a huge fan and delighted to have you join me today, Susan.
Andrew, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, I have no idea if I can claim to be the most, the most connected or influential person, but it's very nice to be categorized as such.
I'm sure you are, because sometimes people say to me, oh, you're very connected, and I guess that's part of the job. But when I walk into these rooms and I see you, I think not nearly as my network's a fraction of yours. So can we kick off? I always when we have these conversations, I always like to talk about early life, Susan, and life before real estate, if I could put it like that. Would you mind telling me that part of your story?
Okay, so life before real estate. Well, I never intended to be a lawyer, and I certainly never intended to be a real estate lawyer, and it started when I was articled at a firm in the West End, which was the original Breacher & Co, which was the go-to real estate law firm at the time. And you know, I went there because I met somebody at law school who was there, and it seemed rather an interesting firm with Bentleys lined up outside the front door. And it was a very commercial place, and I'd been to various other law firms and they seemed a little bit sort of grey and dusty, and I didn't think I could fit in. And I walked in there, and it was like a really exciting place to be. All the big real estate investors and developers at the time were clients. So, you know, it was complete accident. And also at that time, there weren't many women in the world of real estate, and clients who were all men had to be asked whether it was okay to have a woman acting for them. And so I was introduced to this incredibly colourful, exciting world, and sort of thrown in completely at the deep end. So it was okay, you know, the partner was going away for 4 weeks in the summer, you know, go and look after, you know, Godfrey Bradman or John Sunley or whoever it was. And the result of all that was, I mean, I was planning other things. I was going to art school. I wasn't planning a long-term career in the law. But they offered me partnership as soon as I qualified, which again, I mean, it was a complete mistake, actually. They thought I'd been there for about 4 years, and they offered me partnership. And it was a bit difficult. It wasn't what I had in mind, but it was a bit difficult to turn that down. So that's, you know, that's how it started. And I suppose if you start like that, you get to know the people that are, you know, running the big property companies, and it's a sort of fairly good start in real estate.
Are you being modest, as in that they'd offered me partnership? It can't have been an accident.
It wasn't entirely an accident, but I got called in to see the senior partner, and he offered me partnership. And then he said, well, you have been qualified for 2 years, haven't you? And I said, well, actually, no, I qualify in September. So he said, well, you know, we can't make you a partner. I said, well, look, you've offered partnership, and I'd be terribly, you know, disappointed if you withdrew it. So we came to a compromise. I think I became a partner after I was qualified 6 months. I mean, it was a huge responsibility. And, you know, I felt I had so much to prove, you know, as a woman, you know, relatively young, not knowing that much about, you know, about property law, it has to be said. And the expression that, you know, you fake it until you make it, you appear confident whilst thinking, oh my God, what's, you know, what's this about, is, you know, absolutely how it was.
And tell me, I guess diving straight in, what makes a great real estate lawyer, I guess any lawyer, but a great real estate lawyer as opposed to, what's the, you know, what's the magic?
I don't know. I mean, you obviously have to be good at what you do. It's not just, you know, knowing the law, it's understanding your client's business, understand being commercial about it, because there's absolutely no point just pursuing legal points, because that might give you great satisfaction, but the client is not going to get the deal. So it's this sort of wonderful combination of you know, having your client's trust, understanding your client's business, and just going out to get the best deal for them.
And did you specialize, because real estate's a big industry, did you focus on one element of the puzzle over time, or?
Well, not particularly. I mean, the firm was, you know, primarily a real estate practice, and, you know, just really in the thick of you know, all the deals that were going on. So I think I probably did exclusively real estate. I don't think, you know, I spent much time in other departments. And, you know, what I loved about it, you know, was the people. I mean, just, you know, these incredibly, you know, charismatic, entrepreneurial, you know, types. And I think that's still, you know, what keeps me passionate about the sector.
And I should know the answer to this question, I suppose, but do you still practice as a lawyer? I see you as a figurehead and a connector and a networker and advisor.
Yeah, I mean, not so much. I mean, obviously, I look after my clients. I sort of get involved. I make sure that they've got the you know, the A team looking after them. But I think my colleagues are better, you know, at dealing with the detail. So, you know, not so much these days.
So what does a COVID set of conditions bring to through your lens? You know, how does that affect your world as a lawyer?
You know, it's in a way, it's too early to say. I mean, we knew exactly where we were when we all locked down in March, and we were amazing, you know, all started working remotely, and with the wonders of technology, we found that we could do virtually, you know, everything we needed to do sitting away from the office. But obviously, I mean, you've talked about the networking side of things, and real estate is very much a people business. So it's been a whole part of, you know, what we normally do, you know, which isn't there. And, you know, just in terms of negotiating, yeah, Zoom is fantastic. And, you know, we can have a conversation and talk to each other. But, you know, if you're in a difficult negotiation, you want to see all the, you know, you want to see everything that's going on, you know, the nonverbal cues. And, it's less personal. So I think one of the difficulties we're going to have, you know, as we begin to get back to work, is that you've got some people who are going to be sitting in the office. You're going to have some people who are, you know, working remotely, and actually trying to ensure that a meeting, which is sort of hybrid, part remote, part, you know, there around the table, you know, not sure that the technology at the moment is really up to making that, you know, work ideally, because I think sort of people who are there in the meeting are going to sort of effectively have an advantage, because they can all see each other, talk to each other, and the others are on some screen. So that's going to be something we need to deal with. And I think you know, if a client says, I'd like to have a meeting, I want to see you, and you're sort of sitting out somewhere, you know, miles away, that's going to be a little bit tricky to manage. And I think people are feeling their way to a certain extent, you know, getting people back to the office. Very few people seem to be talking at the moment about being back in the office, you know, 5 days a week. So trying to schedule meetings where you want everybody actually there, again, is going to be even more challenging than it normally is.
I agree. And may I ask, what's Michigan's position been, you know, now that we're, I guess, a couple of months post-lockdown, or, you know, the firm lockdown? You're a big entity. How has the partnership, it is a partnership, correct? Yeah.
Partnership, yes.
Triple checking.
I mean, the answer is I have some partners who've been there throughout. Literally, you know, they've been in the office because it suits them. That's the way they work. You know, they want to see clients. Management board have been there largely throughout. So, you know, quite a lot of us are actually, you know, back there, you know, a couple of days a week. And I think that, I mean, we are sitting here in the middle of August, and August is generally the time that people are on holiday. So I think a lot of people are actually taking a break now, you know, with a view to being sort of back, you know, working in September. So, you know, we'll see how it goes in September. But, you know, like everybody, one of the difficulties is getting people to Holborn, because a lot of people will come in by public transport, and there's still a nervousness about public transport. And ideally you get people walking and cycling, but you know, not everybody lives within striking distance of the office. And if people start driving, we have a problem, because obviously there is less driving surface with more cycle lanes and more pedestrianisation. And you can see, I mean, what do you do if you're worried about public transport and you want to get into the city or into the West End? You get in your car, and that's not what we want either.
No. So predictions, I've said to my team, you know, I think we'll have a gauge of where the market really is come the second or third week of September. In my business, that's how it feels. What do you think the market will look like, or your world will look like in the second half of September? Any forecasts?
No, I think it could take a little bit. It could take a little bit longer, but I think we'll start seeing, you know, what's happening as we get through September, you know, into the autumn. But there has been a lot of talk about the future of the office. A lot of people making predictions about, you know, people moving out of London. A lot of predictions about people working remotely, the third space, you know, offices in the suburbs. I mean, all that sort of thing takes it takes a long time to actually work through. So I think it will take a little while for things to settle down and for people to see what works and what doesn't work.
So in terms, what's your view on the future of the office, if I can try and pin you down?
Oh, okay. The future. Well, it's interesting because people are talking as if COVID has caused this. And I don't know if you've read Dror Pollak's book, Rethinking Real Estate, which that was published in the autumn. And talking about all the pre-existing trends. I mean, we talked about COVID as a great accelerator, and it has sort of catapulted everything forward. So there was this, you know, trend to work remotely because people could. There was a trend towards using technology because it was available, but people weren't using it. So what has happened is that, I mean, the ability to remote work has been there actually for quite a long time. I mean, I always quote Mark Dixon, founder of Regis, who 25, 30 years ago was telling us all, you don't need to commute. You can go and plug your computer in at a local work centre, and working is going to be different. But we sort of ignored that and just carried on commuting, maybe because we like commuting. I don't know. But you know, he was saying that that was even pre the mobile phone. It was when, you know, mobile phones were these big brick things that you lugged around. So it's sort of, the ability has been there, but I suppose it takes a shock like this for people to think, oh, actually, we don't need to be, you know, doing what we've done every day. So I think that we will see more offices, we'll see more satellite offices and the sort of hub and spoke type idea. But I think it's rather going to depend where, you know, your workforce comes from, because there are some big corporates that have, you know, a lot of their people who come from a certain direction. So it would make sense to say, okay, we'll set up a sort of satellite office, Croydon, or, you know, wherever it is people live. But otherwise, you know, people need to be with other people, unless you do something which is completely, you know, you just work completely on your own. There is no doubt that people need to collaborate, that, you know, 2 and 2 makes 5. If you put people together to brainstorm, they will come up with ideas which they're not going to come up with, you know, if they're sitting in their bedrooms at home. So you need to create that environment. So I think people will just think a little bit more deeply about what the office is for. So I don't think it is going to be somewhere where you just go and sit at your computer all day, because, you know, what's the point? But it's certainly somewhere that, you know, is going to represent, you know, your brand, your culture, you know, where people, you know, congregate and actually, you know, do something that they can't do if they're on their own. I mean, and the other thing, you know, that's important that we've all been talking about a lot is, you know, the younger generation coming through.
Yeah.
Because how do people learn? They learn from, you know, watching other people, listening to other people, you know, being part of a team. And again, you lose that if people are just dispersed. So there are all sorts of very compelling reasons that people need to be together. I think it's just going to cause a big real rethink and, you know, reset. But the answer is going to be different from, you know, every business.
I think you're absolutely right on that next generation. And, you know, companies, some companies that have hundreds of years worth of heritage and legacy, it's a, you know, it's a big worry for me is developing that next generation. One thing, the sort of 50-year-old partner who's been, you know, specializing for 25 years working from their home office, that they can function, I'm sure. But it's the 25-year-old want to be partner that I think.
I know. And if somebody had said to me, you know, when I was starting off, you know, in my career, oh, really good news, you do not, you know, you don't have to commute into Mayfair and, you know, opposite Claridge's, next to Selfridge's, we really don't need you to be here at all, you can sit at home and you know, do your work. I mean, it was all about, you know, meeting people and you know, sort of social thing. And so yes, it might suit some people, you know, who, if they've got, you know, nice house and big garden and everything, and not so concerned about, you know, the social side of things, but it's certainly not going to suit some people.
I guess, Susan, this kind of links quite neatly with technology, because I know you are way ahead of the curve from a prop tech, real estate tech perspective to most. So do you have thoughts on that around which tech you're aware of might be a winner? Obviously Zoom's probably done okay, but what are your thoughts in terms of the property technology landscape and what COVID?
I'm hugely optimistic, you know, for the future of prop tech, and having spent the last few years sort of sitting around, you know, with people saying, you know, why is the property sector so slow in embracing all this, you know, technology that's available? And I sit on the British Property Federation Technology and Innovation Group, also the Urban Land Institute Europe Tech Group, and, you know, we've been, you know, talking about all this, and, you know, everybody criticizes the property sector for, you know, not being in the forefront of change, and you can see, you know, certain people are very happy with the way that they have done things traditionally and can't see that they need any change. So again, this has just, I mean, we wouldn't have been able to do the things that we've done over the last few months without technology. And but interestingly, talking to people, the technology that is being adopted now is not new technology. It's things that had been developed, but there is now a huge take up for it. So for instance, the apps that are being used to connect occupiers of a building or a campus, you know, have really ramped up during this period, because it's been largely, you know, the only way landlords have been able to keep in contact with, you know, with their tenants and occupiers. So, I mean, interestingly, British Land have just announced a partnership with Equiom to, you know, to launch a new tenant app. And it's those sort of, you know, those sort of things which, you know, will make, you know, everything more efficient, will link people, will create communities. And again, I think encourage people to come back to the workplace, because they will be part of that community. So those obviously those sort of things are important. And I mean, there is so much, because if you look at the whole life cycle of real estate, you know, from, you know, the planning stages, the construction stages, the, you know, construction tech, you know, through to, you know, managing buildings. There is so much, and I think it's just opened people's eyes to what is, you know, to what is possible. And then, you know, I think a lot of people have made the point you have to regard COVID as a wake-up call for climate change. So, you know, focus on sustainable buildings and then monitoring buildings, air quality. I mean, that sort of technology is going to be increasingly important. And one of the interviews that I did recently for my podcast was with an air quality expert, just talking about COVID as being, you know, airborne, you know, air filtration systems. And he said he thinks that the real estate sector has been asleep at the wheel on all this. So I think we're going to see a lot more on, you know, how you run a building to keep it as sort of healthy and safe as possible for the people that are in it.
Yeah, it's amazing in a way, isn't it, that and you know, Grenfell would be another example of, I think, where tech surely could play a bigger part than it appears to, in terms of the well-being of buildings and the well-being of the people within the buildings.
Yes, so there is, you know, there is a lot out there. There's a lot of new technology just being developed, you know, the whole time. And one of the things that we have at Mishcons is we've been running for the last few years our own incubator. So we, you know, bring in, say, 6 or 7 tech startups every year, and we work with them over a very concentrated period of time, help them develop their sort of business and ideas, and they actually get to test their technology on a, you know, on a real live business. So you're able to sort of see what works, what doesn't work. And there've been a couple of really interesting real estate tech startups that have come through our incubator and are doing incredibly well. There's Third Fort, which is an online onboarding platform for residential property transactions, and Orbital Witness, which is 3 young space scientists that use satellite imagery to help with the due diligence and search process. So there is a lot interesting that's going on, and in practical terms, it's really useful for our people to actually be working with these new businesses and see how they can refine the service that they provide to clients.
So, 2 top tips there. If there's a savvy investor listening to this, you think that they're 2 winners, are they?
Well, they seem to be both doing very well, actually. They've been through several rounds of funding, so. But, you know, really good example of what happens when, you know, you take, you know, a tech idea you work with people that are working in real estate and then make sure that the idea provides a solution, you know, to enhance the service, because no point actually coming up with a brilliant idea if nobody wants to use it.
Susan, I want to move this subject across to this fabulous network of yours, infamous network in a way, and I think BizNow quoted you as the most, did they not quote you as the most connected person in real estate, or words?
I think they describe me as the most connected woman in real estate, and
well, that's interesting.
As my friend Steve Norris said, well, actually it's probably the most connected person, but it was very nice of them to say that. But I don't like the word networking, you know, when somebody talks about networking, because it has to have a purpose. There's no point, you know, just connecting people. And I just sort of see it as an opportunity to actually create business. I mean, I'm always interested in talking to people that, you know, have new ideas, or, you know, run interesting businesses. But then, you know, the next thing is, well, okay, what could I do usefully to actually connect them with, you know, with somebody else? I think it has to have a purpose. And, you know, I just always think if you can sort of help people and actually put them in touch with something that's going to be useful to them, then that's a positive thing to do.
But on a Sunday afternoon, do you sit there and look at your network and think, you know, recruitment professionals, one measurement is LinkedIn classically is the sort of default platform for my sector. I think I'm up to about 12,500 connections on LinkedIn. It was your job to be, you know, your professional networker and connector and client liaison. So did you have a strategy around it, or do you measure your performance?
Well, I suppose the object is to create new business, and you know, to find out, you know, what's going on in the sector, and, you know, explore areas where we should be involved, and you know, maybe we're not involved, and also just to make sure that the world knows about, you know, the exciting things that we're doing. But I think I've always been interested you know, in the people side of real estate, and also, I think having spent time at London Business School, and I did the Sloan Masters program there, which is a very concentrated form of MBA. You sort of do the whole MBA in one academic year. So I came out of that, you know, thinking, well, I'm passionate about the real estate sector, but it just does seem to be a little bit behind the curve. And all the things that I'd learned about, you know, customer service, branding, and I looked around the real estate sector, and I thought, I'm not sure that you know, people even know who the customer are in this industry. And this, you know, this was going back a few years. So one of the things that came out of that was my writing, because I thought, well, okay, I can see that these are areas that people in real estate should be doing more about. I'm going to see if I can push the envelope a little bit and write about some of these things. And that's how my journalistic career, I started writing for Property Week, and I've sort of more or less sort of continued on and off being a contributor over that time. So again, you know, I do quite a lot on social media. That came out of the writing, actually, because when Giles Barry was editor of Property Week, he said I should look at Twitter. And I said, well, why, you know, why would I look at that? He said, well, just have a look at it. And I just saw it was the most amazing source of information. So, you know, for me, always like trawling through, looking for new, interesting concepts, you know, it's been amazing. If I see something that's really interesting, I'll just get, you know, in touch with the person, you know, running the startup, whatever, and saying, you know, can we have a chat? So it's just bringing all that, you know, together, which I suppose, you know, you call networking, but it's really facilitating, connecting, and not, you know, not just, you know, meeting people for the sake of it, really.
No, you talking of writing, I think you could probably write a book with some.
I was going to one of when I came out of business school, I thought, well, okay, you know, there are such interesting entrepreneurs and characters in real estate. Wouldn't it be interesting to write a book about it? But I realized that this was going to be a bit tricky because, you know, so many of the things that people tell me, you know, I'm not going to talk about. Yeah. So it didn't actually happen. Then, of course, the personalities I would have written about then, you know, probably shifted anyway. And then, of course, Peter Bill wrote his book, Planet Property. And I thought, well, okay, you know, he wrote a fantastic book about, you know, all the personalities in real estate. And so I've just carried on with my columns, blogs and social media.
I feel like putting you on the spot here and asking you to name the three most interesting characters that stand out over your career. Leaders of property companies.
Well, that really is putting me on the spot because you know, there are so many interesting and colourful characters, and they are each of them interesting, you know, for different reasons. But since you've asked me, there is one I will mention, and that is the late Tony Pidgley, because I'm still so devastated. You know, that he's died. I mean, he was somebody who was so influential, and I had him lined up to interview for the podcast, and we didn't quite do the interview. So, and he, I mean, when I look back over my, you know, Twitter timeline over the last few years, of so much, you know, so many comments from Tony Pidgley, because he was always there, you know, speaking for the, you know, for the property industry. He had the ear of, you know, Downing Street, the London Mayor, and, you know, was incredibly charitable as well. And, you know, just a really charismatic person. And he's just left such, you know, a big gap. That was shocking.
It was. Do you think the property industry is becoming less characterful? Or is it sanitized?
It's certainly different, and I suppose the big, you know, swashbuckling, you know, characters one doesn't see so much anymore. So I'm always on the lookout for interesting and talented, you know, younger people coming through the industry. And one of the people I interviewed recently is Jacob Loftus, who is a young developer who runs General Projects, and you know, gives the millennial viewpoint. And I actually, you know, he is doing you know, great things, and you know, so I, you know, good example of characterful younger generation coming through. But I asked him the question about, you know, how do we get, you know, more, you know, younger people coming into the industry, and he said, well, actually, they're there. The problem is, you know, they don't get a chance to be heard or to make decisions, and we should be paying more attention to the younger people that are in the sector, which I thought was, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, we obviously have a reasonably good lens into that world, and I think he's right. There's no lack of young people. I think the challenge is empowering them and enabling them to, you know, move the needle or shift the perspective. Diversity is a big topic, and you know, you referenced that you are a young female lawyer in a man's world, and you're very much seen as one of the most high profile women in our sector. What do you think the number one thing is that we should do that we're not doing to evolve that story?
I just think, I mean, one of the things that concerns me is the perception of the real estate sector. And, we all saw the British Property Federation perception survey last year that I showed, I think 27% of the public, you know, had a favourable impression of the real estate sector. So I think in order to attract people in, we need to be doing a better job of actually telling the stories. I mean, you know, we are creating the environment in which people live and work and do everything. And yet you tend to just hear the negative. So most people, you know, they talk about real estate, they'll probably be thinking about, you know, estate agents. And, you know, there isn't really an understanding of what the sector, you know, what the sector can do. So I think that, for starters, there are some great initiatives ongoing, you know, Pathways Project, you know, going into schools, telling people about, you know, what the opportunities are. But it also, I just sometimes think we need a sort of rebrand for the property sector, because it, you know, it is so positive, and yet the positive doesn't get out there. And I was actually having quite a funny podcast conversation with James Saunders, who runs Quintain, because we were at business school at the same time. And he came from a branding marketing background. And I said, look, you should think about real estate. You know, it's just such a fantastic sector. And, you know, he just, you know, he thought it was at the time, you know, dinosaur, and, you know, wasn't interested. Fortunately, others subsequently spoke to him, and he ended up coming into real estate. But that was the view of, you know, I think most of the people I was at business school with, that it wasn't a sector that they found exciting or interesting. So, yeah, I think we could do better on getting that messaging out.
Well, if anyone can do it, I think you're the person for the job.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. That's, I would love to, but I think I would need some money and some people behind me.
I think you can access both, probably. No, back to that.
Let's start a campaign.
Okay. Well, we shall do that. So your podcast, I mean, I have to hold my hands up and confess, you're absolutely my inspiration for this, and I follow you avidly, and I listen to all of your podcasts, and they're brilliant. What's the secret?
I don't know. I mean, it's you know, very, very, very kind of you to say that you listen to them, because it's you sometimes you don't know. I mean, I sort of put them out there, and you know, it's fantastic when people come back and say, oh, I've listened to this one, you know, it was really great. And you know, particularly younger people in the industry actually get in touch and say, you know, that was really interesting. And I've also had, you know, people say, yeah, they, you know, before they go to meet somebody for the first time, they'll listen to the podcast to get an idea of what, you know, what the person's about. But it all started, I don't know, so I think 18 months ago, Natasha Guerra, who runs Runway East, which is a flexible working operation in London, just wrote to me and said, I really think you should be doing a podcast. There aren't any women in real estate doing it. You should think about it. And I thought she'd written to several people. And when I found out that she'd only written to me and she'd actually researched it, I thought, well, you know, maybe I should. So I didn't even know what a podcast was, I think, at that point. And I started off, rather than going for somebody I knew really well, that would be less challenging, I decided to start with Brendan Wallace, who's co-founder of Fifth Wall VC Fund in Venice Beach, California. And we sat down, he was visiting London, we sat down in the recording studio, and he said, oh, have you done many of these? I said, well, actually, no, this is my first one. He meanwhile had done loads of them. And I don't know, I'm sure there are lots of secrets that I'm not so aware of, so any suggestions for improving it would be greatly received.
Well, not from me. I think they're amazing, and I listen to them on the train to and from on that lovely commute that we just referenced. Can we I know the demographic of our listeners is you know, probably millennial might be one way to describe them, younger people. And I'd like to get your thoughts, Susan, on, you know, what's the one piece of advice if you could offer a 25-year-old developing property person a tip, what would that tip be?
Yes. Well, it's different. I mean, looking at how things are working at the moment, they need obviously to sort of get in and to be working with people. But I know, you know, from talking to people over the years, you know, the feeling still is that to start in one of the big, you know, property services firms is a really good grounding. And I think that's probably, you know, still the case, to sort of get in there on the ground, really get to know the sector, work with a lot of people, and then you know, work out, because it's, I mean, such a diverse sector in terms of what you can do in relation to real estate. And you know, you have to work out, you know, whether it's residential, you know, office development, and all the tech side of the sector. So, you know, there is so much, but it, you know, it's getting in on the ground and hopefully working with people who would be, you know, really good mentors.
I think that's really good advice. And how does one get onto a graduate scheme if they haven't been to a real estate college? Are they still not sort of populated or dominated by the traditional sort of supply chain universities?
I'm not working, you know, in those firms, but, you know, from what people say to me, all these organizations are so keen to get, you know, some diversity. And it's not just, you know, we're not talking about gender, we're talking about diversity of thought, because you can get, you know, male and female coming from the same sort of backgrounds, thinking the same way. And you actually, what everybody really wants to do is to get people in from completely different backgrounds, because that's when you get, you know, change, you get a different attitude, different way of thinking about things. So I think there probably is a lot of encouragement of people that don't come, you know, from through the normal route. And I think that would be welcomed.
Yeah, well, I that's back to your PR campaign. I think we'll put it on the to do, you know, part of the brief. I think it's really, really important that we spread the message in a much broader fashion than we have been doing perhaps in recent past.
Yeah, and when you talk about spreading the message, I have to say that, you know, whatever you think of social media, certainly at the beginning of lockdown, it was an absolute lifeline, because that was a way of, you know, keeping in touch with like-minded, you know, contacts and colleagues, and getting messages out. And I think it would have been a lot lonelier and a lot bleaker, you know, if we didn't have social media to, you know, to connect us. And so, you know, be able to see what was going on in other organizations, how people were, you know, dealing with lockdown, how they were, you know, connecting with their colleagues and clients.
Yeah, I agree with you. Susan, so I look at your career and I think you've achieved so much, you know. I'm in awe of everything that you've achieved and the variety of your role and things like that. But what does the future bring career-wise for you? Is there something still on the checklist?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always looking, you know, for things that you know, are sort of interesting and different. And I've started, you know, I've got sort of, apart from the my MishCon role, I'm a non-exec director at This Land, which is a small development company in Cambridge, which you know, is great. and a number of advisory board roles. But now I'm just, because I suppose my skill set is, you know, slightly unusual. Yes, I'm a lawyer, but obviously there are some various other aspects to it as well. So yeah, I'm always looking for, you know, opportunities where I actually can do something useful. And really what I want to be able to do is to use those, you know, contacts, for, positive reasons.
Well, I'm looking forward to that lunch we discussed before the recording, and we can brainstorm a few ideas, because I think there are many, many companies out there that would jump at the chance to tap into the into your brains. Now, Susan, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but I'm conscious of time. We're trying to be good and keep to the allotted slot that we discussed. So what I tend to do towards the end of these conversations is a quick fire round, whereby I ask you a quick question and you give me a quick answer. Are you up for playing that game?
Yeah, sounds terrifying. Please go ahead.
Okay, start. Beds or sheds?
Beds or sheds? Okay, beds.
Country house or penthouse suite?
Country house.
Law or tech?
Both.
Oh.
Is that allowed?
Well, I think you're breaking the rules.
I usually do, so I'll go with that.
Okay, we'll move on. Bowie or the Beatles?
Beatles.
And the final question I ask everybody who joins me is this. If you could own any building in the world, which building would it be and why?
I think it would have to be the Taj Mahal, and I think it would make a wonderful hotel.
Really? Have you been?
Hmm.
Everybody I know who's been names that as the best building in the world.
It is. It's beautiful, and the, you know, the workmanship is just absolutely stunning, and it's quite strange to see it in real life, because we've all seen it, you know, on biscuit tins, and it sort of somehow, you know, spoils these iconic places, but it is truly beautiful. Yeah, I'm not sure I would turn it into a hotel, but I mean, it is just such a stunning building.
I must get there one day. Susan, I can't thank you enough for doing this for me, because as I said, I'm conscious that I've turned the tables on you a little bit, but it's only because I'm a huge fan, and I see it as a real coup to have done so. So thanks so much for doing this. I know you're a real inspiration to many, many people out there in our wonderful sector.
Andrew, thank you. Thank you very much. And it's not that unpleasant having the tables turned on me.
Yes. E minor. Thank you ever so much.
You can join the DS movement by visiting ds.devrilsmith.com, and you will receive the latest DevCast episode direct to your inbox.